This morning we're going to learn about broadband for Minnesota computer users, and this is Minnesota This Week, a public affairs program from Radio City Network News and this station. I'm Curtis Beckman. Our guest this morning is Christopher Mitchell, who is Director of Telecommunications for the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. We've been stumbling on that phrase, but it's a long-standing organization of people who do research on public policy issues, and one of which is the use of broadband and broadband monopolies. Is that right?
That is right, yes.
What do we have? What is broadband? Let's start there.
So broadband is a technology that allows you to communicate with others.
But the broadband is what AOL has for us or somebody else.
Right. So a lot of people originally used dial-up to connect to AOL, and then over time we got faster connections, which we term broadband. And so this is a DSL, which you may get from your phone company, or the cable broadband you may get from Comcast in the Twin Cities or other companies outside of there. And it allows you to transmit information very quickly, anything from pictures to words to multimedia files like, radio shows, for instance.
And so what's wrong with what we have now? It's rather expensive, I must say. But what's wrong with what we have now?
Well, there's a variety of ways to answer that question, and it depends on where you are. So if you're in rural Minnesota, the question would be, what do you have now? And you probably don't have very much, because it costs a lot to build these networks, and so the private companies have really not built the fast networks outside of the Twin Cities and Rochester, Duluth, and even smaller areas like Fergus Falls may have decent stuff, and then just 1 mile out of town, there's very little. So that's one answer, which is to say that you may not have a whole lot. In other areas, we might say that in the Twin Cities, we have much faster connections than we would in outstate Minnesota. But it's still not very fast compared to what we see in other peer nations across the world. And we pay a lot for it. And so there's two different options right there.
Is it a monopoly?
Well, it depends on whether you're talking to a strict economist or not. The Twin Cities has two providers of broadband, really, Quest and Comcast. Now, Comcast speeds are much faster than Quest's, depending on where you are. For the vast majority of people, that's a true statement. And so for an Uber geek like me, it is a monopoly because it's either Comcast or I really don't have what I would consider fast broadband. Mm-hmm. Now, on the other hand, you might say it's a duopoly, which is a word we don't use as often, but the fact is that it's very rare in America for people to have choices outside of the telephone company and the cable company for broadband.
Right. And that's what you have spent some time researching and have developed some, position papers on the issue of availability of broadband, specifically in greater Minnesota, and the monopolies, perhaps, that exist in the Twin Cities.
Right. Our research focuses on specifically what communities have done in the issue of broadband to make sure that their communities are well served.
Specifically in the Twin Cities, when you talk about communities, you're talking about cities. Cities have to go to these companies to get broadband service. Am I correct?
Well, oftentimes the city will go to a broadband company and say, our businesses need faster connections. What can you do for us? Mm-hmm. And so that is a very common situation, yes.
And so, and that's the point at which you say, well, maybe the city could build its own network.
Right. And we have in Minnesota two cities that have done that with the most up-to-date fiber optic technology. And then there's a number of other communities that have done it with wireless technologies.
And so these are cities themselves, which, is it more cost-effective for them to build their own network than to pay a monthly amount to Comcast or to somebody else?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer. Generally, those that do it would say yes. But there's other benefits as well, as opposed to just necessarily saving money. So you might be bringing in faster speeds than are already available, and that may lure more businesses. This city may be lowering the prices, and so senior citizens and people who are living below the poverty line are better able to access the Internet, which is the most amazing store of human knowledge ever created.
Right.
So it may not just be an issue of lowering the cost to the city. It may be an issue of improving access for everyone, making sure that the schools can afford the fast connections they need to give kids a modern education, to make sure they have access to the tools that they need. It can mean economic development. And it can also mean better entertainment. And I don't want to shy away from that. Some people would say, well, the city's just going to build a faster network so I can download my videos from YouTube faster. And to that I would say, that can be a legitimate reason, because cities want people to live in them. And if you want to attract people that are, you know, younger people coming out of college and whatnot, you have to have fast broadband, because it's one of the largest, fastest growing forms of entertainment. People are serious about it. Gaming is big business. And so cities aren't wrong to look at this in terms of a quality of life issue as well.
Let's go back to square one.
Sure.
And explain for me and others who are not geeks, but who are somewhat initiated in this arena, and explain to me and us why it is that some people have a capacity to get broadband through Comcast. Somebody, a city, can build its own. What is it they're building? Is it a collection of wires or cables? Is it equipment? Is it all of that? And then the internet is run on the strength of its members and its computers that are serving it. Am I correct?
Right. Yes. So when a city decides it's going to build this sort of access to the internet, what they're doing is they're putting a lot of wires in the ground or on telephone poles, and those wires are allowing people, and they go all the way to the home, they attach to the side of the house, and they then connect to a single hub in a city generally, and oftentimes that hub will then connect to Minneapolis, to a building that has connections with all the telecommunication providers of the country, really. And from there, any sort of signal is routed to the computers that will serve it. And so the internet is basically a whole lot of computers that are just spread out all around the country and connected on similar networks, and the computers find a way of routing their information to each other.
And so when we send something, we are sending power too into the internet to give it some strength to keep going.
Yes.
that's the part that's hard to understand.
It's understanding how the internet works is fascinating, because I think as you get a better sense of how anarchic it is, you don't expect it to work as well as it does.
Yeah. So you say a city will then wire all of its homes into one network.
Yes.
Now, that has to be costly.
It's very costly. And in fact, it's so costly that this is the biggest barrier to getting better networks throughout the country, regardless of who's doing it. Running wires to everyone, the cost is almost entirely labor. You have to put a lot of wires up. You have to then get those either trenched across people's lawns and in the ground, or else attached via from the telephone pole via drop cable. And the process of doing that is very labor intense, and so you have to pay people that are specialized in it to do it. So not only is it expensive, I would note that in our current climate, it's an effective jobs program.
Right. And then the other way that you said a network could be created is wireless, in a wireless frame.
Right.
How does that work?
So with wireless, it really depends on the technology being used, but generally you have a tower somewhere that has a node, is what we call it, and that is an antenna that is transmitting data. And so depending on the technology, you may have a few of those throughout an entire city, or you may have a whole lot of them. And so in Minneapolis with the Wi-Fi, you may have 40 of these antennas per square mile.
Is that Wi-Fi?
That is Wi-Fi, yes. This is what we use in our homes.
In Minneapolis.
Right. So when I say Wi-Fi in our homes, I mean almost all of us have these Wi-Fi networks in our homes, where regardless of what technology we use to connect to the internet, we can connect wirelessly inside of our house because we've set up our own network. Now, Minneapolis, along with other cities, said, well, we could do this on a citywide basis and make it available everywhere. Now, Wi-Fi didn't really stretch very well, and the technology is not well suited to that sort of technology to make it available on a citywide basis. And in general, wireless suffers from problems of it's much slower than wired connections typically. The technology just lags a little bit. And then there's the problem of reliability, which is to say that we typically have much higher reliability out of a wire than we do out of wireless. You and I are speaking over wired mics right now. I think people who do this sort of thing, when you look at them on major sporting events. You often see, for instance, at the Metrodome, you'll see people, two or three people per camera, moving the wires around for the cameras that are on the sidelines. And that's because wired is very reliable, whereas wireless can drop out and have other problems.
Mm-hmm. Interference,
right.
Specifically. So Comcast is wired.
Yes.
Quest is wired.
Yes.
They have wires to our homes, probably. Maybe Comcast is hit or miss, but as you call in for service to Comcast, they will find a way to wire you up.
Right.
And so then what is the physical nature of that wire to my home from Comcast or from Quest?
Both of them are based on copper. And so it's electrical signals sent down a copper wire, basically. And so the cable is shielded and allows faster transmissions, whereas the DSL from a cable, or from a phone company, I should say, the DSL is just a telephone line.
And just a telephone line. There are different qualities of those, too, aren't there?
There are, yes.
And so you can get a higher quality to get more speed, I suppose.
Right. The technology is quite limited, though, in terms of what it can do compared to what we see happening with the communities that choose to build their own networks.
Mm-hmm.
And so a community may be looking at these options and saying, we really need faster speeds, and they go to the telephone company, as we already said, and say, we need faster speeds. And the telephone company will say, well, we don't really think you need faster speeds, and the cost for us to replace our copper with fiber optics, which would be much faster, that is too great for us to expend in this community, so you're going to have to be stuck with it. So in many cases, cities have said, well, we've decided that we're going to build a new network, and it's going to be all fiber optic, which is this, instead of using copper and electrons, it uses light beams on these glass strands, which is, everyone likes to talk about that, but it's really immaterial. The point is that it allows much more data to be transmitted over a much shorter period of time.
Does all of the data that is handled by Comcast, is that on fiber optic cables up to a point and from there distributed by their cables?
Absolutely. So they've moved the bottleneck closer to the home.
That's what I was going to get to, yeah.
Yes.
And so the closer to the home, what, to a local station? Where it's networked out to the neighborhood?
Right, so it depends on where you are. So the fiber may run to and inside a neighborhood, and then nearby 200, 300, maybe even 700 homes all share that fiber. And so it may be a box on the ground, it may be on a telephone pole, depends on the network.
Mm-hmm. And so the fiber optics are becoming more common and becoming more involved with all of these communication devices, is that correct?
Yes, it is. Although many of the companies, Quest has been very adamant that they don't see a fiber to the home future anytime really. Comcast has said that they don't see a need to go fiber to the home. They'll just push the bottleneck a little bit closer. And every time you get the fiber closer to the users, typically the experience speeds do increase. But there's still a variety of problems that come from relying on copper for that last mile, is what it's called.
And so are those the two alternatives right now to delivery of internet to homes and so forth, in the delivery by wire and or cable and the delivery by fiber?
In terms of fast speeds, yes. Now, some would argue that this idea of WiMAX, which is wireless technology, which has nothing to do with Wi-Fi, but they like the naming and they capitalized on that. That is going to be available in the Twin Cities soon. It will be a wireless option. It will be competitive with DSL. And some would tell you that WiMAX will eventually be competitive with the wires. But I would say that you're correct in saying that the real options for high-speed broadband are limited to cable and fiber optic.
And so Quest is not using fiber optic to any great degree.
They would say they are.
Okay.
They advertise that they have fiber optic fast speeds, but their investment in fiber optic has been very small compared to others, and people are very limited by the copper.
And Comcast has been using more and more of it to bring it closer and closer to our homes, and therefore shore up their delivery of data. And if, is there any kind of technology that isn't fully developed yet that might surpass both of them?
Unlikely. Right, almost all the research is into making fiber optics faster. And so with fiber optics...
What, with more fiber cables?
Well, that's one possibility. Another possibility is using multiple wavelengths on a single fiber. And the light's transmitted by pulsed lasers. And so to the extent that you can time the pulses more quickly, I presume... And this is more of a fascination for me than an area of study because my focus is on policy more than the technology. But they are working on ways of making even a single fiber strand to be able to put more fiber or more information on that single fiber. There is, at this point, if there was to be something that would be surpassing fiber optics as a medium of exchanging information, the universities would be experimenting on it. There's just nothing really on the horizon right now that surpasses this.
And so the direct connection is ultimately the best and the most reliable. There is some communication by wireless means, but that even has a head point somewhere, which I suppose is connected then by fiber optics to something.
That's right.
And so that's just another variation of a fiber optic delivery of data. So there's nothing really on the horizon. Now, when you talk about communities building their own networks with their own fiber optics or other cabling, whatever, you're talking about cities? Are you also talking about a university for its own uses? Are you also talking about nonprofit organizations? Let's go there for a few minutes and talk about how it's delivered.
Sure. There's a variety of means. Universities often have their own fiber optic networks on campus. Sometimes they may have fiber optics a little bit off campus to connect to the internet or to other research areas.
So are they using Comcast and their connections to the internet?
They may be. So there's a variety of, not in the sense that a home user would, but okay. Comcast provides services to businesses just as many other specialized companies do that we don't deal with, like Level 3. We can't take Level 3 in our home.
But what's that?
They're a company that specializes in what's called backhaul or middle mile kind of connections where they have, you know, we're talking about the superhighways of the internet, where the major different hubs all transmit information back and forth to each other. Oftentimes, a company like Level 3 or others will have those connections and they'll lease them out. So a university may build its own fiber optic network. They may lease their connections. They may do it from a local cable or phone company, or they may do it from another company, which is more specialized in only that.
And so how is the University of Minnesota wired?
You know, I don't know for sure. They've got fiber optics all over the place, and I don't know exactly how they're connected to different...
But the service is fast there.
It's incredibly fast. They've had more than 5 years now, I believe, where every desk has a gigabit, which is a very fast connection.
Yeah. Well, our guest this morning is Christopher Mitchell, who is with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. And this is Minnesota This Week, a public affairs program from Radio City Network News. And this station, I'm Curtis Beckman. Christopher, I'm getting a better picture of what's involved here, but you seem to suggest in the materials that you have on your website, and we'll give that website address before we finish, that even some nonprofits have some means to avoid the heavy cost of working with what might be called a monopoly,
right.
A Comcast or a Quest. How would that work?
So
a nonprofit, for example.
Right. So a nonprofit can do a variety of things. In North Carolina, a nonprofit called the Mountainary Information Network responded to the lack of broadband available locally by building a wireless network. And so whereas the local company, the incumbent telephone company, which was based out of another state and had very little interest in serving this mountainous area, this nonprofit said, we're going to invest in this infrastructure. And so they built wireless towers and they started selling service, and they just do it on a nonprofit basis. In fact, they used the money in that case to run a sort of community radio station and community media source. Now, a very high-profile nonprofit in Ohio has taken a much different approach. This is where they nonprofit that was started by people that were very important locally, regionally, from the local hospitals, the Case Western University, and another major institutions said, we need to find a way of getting better broadband access. And one community, which started off as One Cleveland, this is the nonprofit, they found a way of getting a lot of private companies and public sector institutions to share resources, to utilize fiber that was already in the ground but wasn't really being utilized to its full potential, to share that and to make more broadband available to everyone, lowering the price. And so the private sector got access to better customers, or to more customers, and the public sector got access to additional fiber so they could, you know, form innovative partnerships elsewhere, and the hospitals could all interconnect, and they could find cost savings by sharing records and doing teleconferences to share their specialist expertise. So the nonprofit, in many cases, is a way of doing what others could do, but by making it a nonprofit, you ensure that the benefits stay with the community and that they don't drift away from their mission over time.
So I didn't think of the medical implications here, but clearly if doctors in Rochester want to supervise a surgery in Minneapolis, they've got to have a pretty good connection, a pretty good reliable connection, I suppose. And so how does a place like the Mayo Clinic get its act together and get powerful?
Well, they have undoubtedly have people that are looking into this, and if they didn't before, there was a news article that said when the gas hit $4 a gallon, the Mayo Clinic saw a decrease in people willing to drive to see them. And that's something that I'm sure got the Mayo Clinic's attention. So they undoubtedly have people that are looking at how to strengthen their network, make sure that they have fast connections, make sure that they're getting direct connections to hospitals around. But it even goes further than just connecting hospitals. If you live in a very rural area in the center of Minnesota, you may have to drive a while to get to a hospital, and they may not even have the specialist you need. So what would be ideal is if you could just see the specialist from your home rather than driving to a clinic where you would then visit over telecommunications with a specialist. And then the opposite of that would be if you're at home and you need to have a nurse visit you periodically to monitor your progress, it would be there would be tremendous cost savings if the nurse was able to do that virtually. And many nurses...
What, taking a temperature and taking a pulse through this means?
Right. So that's definitely one way. And Honeywell has systems that will do that sort of thing. And weight is actually tremendously important, making sure that you're tracking the weight of a person, because you learn a lot by their weight. And so if a nurse can check in, though, and have a teleconference with you, she or he can make a very good decision as to how you're doing, versus if it was just a telephone call, you can't tell quite as much. And so the nurse may be able to monitor 10 patients, and then rather than having to drive to each one's house, she might see one patient needs more attention and be able to then visit that patient more specifically.
And so with proper wiring then, or connections, that nurse could service someone in the wilds of Lake of the Woods in northern Minnesota.
That's right. And the problem is, of course, is that the private sector, rightfully so, does not see much profit in bringing really fast broadband to Lake of the Woods. And so this is where we see the government needs to take a stronger role, like it did with electricity, like it did with telephones, to make sure that all Americans really have access to these important technologies.
When you mentioned that, that hadn't occurred to me. But the delivery of electricity to everybody at last became a government rule?
Project, yes.
Project.
Right.
And the delivery of phone service to everybody ultimately came into the hands of the government to ensure that it would happen. Is that going to happen here also?
I sure hope so, because I don't see all Americans having good access to broadband if the government does not take a stronger role. It's not to malign the private sector to say that they're not going to do this. The private sector's goal is to make profits and to be self-interested, and it's a system that has worked for a long time. If I'm an investor in Verizon, I do not want them to be building broadband where it's unprofitable. And so the important thing to note is that broadband is no longer just something that's nice to have. It's something that's essential for all of us, for the next generation, for education, for our well-being.
That's the hurdle we have to get over, isn't it?
Yes.
It's essential. It's not a luxury anymore.
Right.
It's essential.
Right. And rather than just also saying the government needs to provide it where the private sector hasn't, with smart government policies, we can have a much stronger private sector in terms of choice between different companies and having real competition. We are right now with our policies, we are not on track to have any sort of competition in broadband. And with smart government policies where we were to build fiber optic networks and allow multiple private companies to compete to offer services. So rather than building a different network for every service provider, different service providers could all use the same network. Then we would have a government policy that really frees the private sector from having to make these massive, costly expenditures to build the networks, and they can really compete on it. And so in many ways, I think we'd have a true market for broadband and something that I think both people who distrust government can get behind because they'll still be getting their services from the private sector. So it's a complicated approach.
Which model is better? Is it the model with the electricity delivery or telephone?
Well, I think electricity delivery was vastly superior to telephone because with electricity delivery, you had the government offering loans to cooperatives to build these networks, to build the electrical grid. And those loans were paid back at an astonishingly high, like 99% rate. So the government, this is a very smart economical move, and it extended electricity very quickly to the entire country. Telephones, we pay a lot of money to private companies to provide telephone service in rural areas, and they don't do a very good job. So I think the telephone model of universal access and relying on the private sector to build in areas where they don't want to build, but we pay them, we subsidize them, that's a poor model. We should look at offering loans to cooperatives and to other groups that are structurally accountable to the public.
Are any countries of the world ahead of us in this regard?
Yes, several.
Everybody?
No, certainly not everybody. But it's year after year, it seems like there's a few more that sneak ahead of us.
Who? Who's ahead?
Well, Japan and South Korea are two that are commonly cited. Now, they have the advantage of having tremendously high urbanization rates where they have very high density.
Everybody lives in the city.
Right. It's a lot cheaper. Well, I shouldn't say it's a lot cheaper, but it's a lot more economical to provide services to everyone in high-rises than it is when everyone's on farms. But there are European countries that have very similar densities to us that are surpassing us. France has tremendous networks. They've leapfrogged us after years of us being ahead of them. And what I would say also is that even though we have very large urban or very large rural areas that are difficult to build these networks, our cities just aren't competitive. And so if you just take out the rural areas and you say, how are our big cities doing? In the Twin Cities, we have very good connectivity compared to many other cities in the U.S., but we pay a lot more for a heck of a lot less than they do in other major cities around the world. And so that's a real cause of concern.
Well, that's another program.
It sure could be.
Because this is very hard to get a handle on, but I think we've done that this morning. This is complex, and it seems as though something could happen quickly with regard to congressional something to make something go as quickly as electricity was finally extended throughout the country. Is that your sense of it? Could something be ready that quickly?
I think so. I think we could see things change very rapidly. And so the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, has prepared a national broadband plan that's going to be debated. And so by quickly, if you mean on a sort of federal government scale, in the next 2 years, we should see something. Right now, it doesn't look like it's going to be anywhere near the magnitude of the rural electrification effort. But we can hope that this becomes more of a priority and government sees a way of doing it better. But in the meantime, communities really can build these networks themselves to ensure that they're going to get the benefits of them. And I write about this almost every day on our site, which is muninetworks.org, M-U-N-I, networks, where we follow what different communities are doing around the country to build these networks because, quite frankly, the states and the feds aren't acting quickly enough for many of these communities.
Give that address again. Then there's another address called, what, New Rules?
That's right. That's our general work for the Minneapolis office, where we do all the policy work for the Institute for Local Self-Reliance.
So go to newrules.org.
That's right.
That'll get you some real meaty stuff. And then what you just described now, the
Muninetworks.org.
Muninetworks, municipal networks.
That's right.
.org.
Yeah, that's where we do all our broadband work.
Christopher Mitchell, this has been wonderful and very informative, and we will have to do it again as we see bigger steps along the way, achievement.
That would be terrific.
Christopher Mitchell, Director of Telecommunications for the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
And this is Minnesota This Week, a public affairs program from Radio City Network News. And this station, I'm Curtis Beckman. We'd like your comment. Please write to Minnesota This Week in care of this station. Or write to Minnesota This Week, Radio City Network News, Post Office Box 390-292, Minneapolis, Minnesota 55439. Thank you, and good morning.